Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off. Hey, welcome to the Dropship Podcast. Today, we are going to talk about five lazy dropshipping techniques. I'm not sure what ChatGPT will name this by the time this comes out, but lazy shit you shouldn't do in your high-ticket dropshipping business. John and I have been around a long time. We've seen a lot of people do a lot of dumb shit. And it's not, some of these aren't even dumb. They're just literally lazy. They're like, you can do better. You can make better choices. And in turn, you will have better outcomes, better results. If you don't do these things, if you maybe lean towards what John and I recommend, I think you'll have better outcomes.
I believe so. First up, only emailing suppliers. This is a very frequent one. And I kind of get it in a way. I mean, calling suppliers. So we say you should call your suppliers. Pick up the phone. You're looking at starting a relationship. People make the best relationships when they talk to each other, surprisingly. Face-to-face is even better, but that's often not possible in the beginning. Emailing, but a lot of people, there's a lot of resistance to that. It's challenging. It's the first time you're putting your business out there. It's the first time you're putting yourself out there. And it's like, there's a real risk that somebody's going to say no, right? You're going to get rejected. Very common fear of rejection, right? And so a lot of people will default to, I'm just going to send some emails and see if people reply back to me. I've definitely sent emails.
Yeah.
I probably did, for sure. Like, it was a long time ago. I can't really remember. I definitely called some. I don't know that I called them all, but I definitely called some. And so it's a trap to get into. And I would say it's lazy, but at the same time, I mean, I understand where the laziness comes from, right? But the reality is business is challenging. Your ongoing success as a business owner is going to be accepting challenges and pushing through them. And this is like your first test. So don't avoid it, because if you avoid it here, it's not going to be any less likely you avoid those challenges in the future. And so definitely call your suppliers. It's going to feel hard in the beginning. Almost everybody who says it, and I've spoken to hundreds of people who have done it, say, oh, you know what? That wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Surprise, surprise. My fears were largely unfounded. And not just like humans just don't communicate very well via text. But not only that, a lot of emails just never get opened. Like, think about your inbox, right? What's like when I come in the morning to my business, Dropship Breakthrough and others, we get a lot of outreach. Like people like, hey man, I've got a proposal for you. Do you want to listen? Do you want to hear it? Hey man, I could help you with your copywriting. Hey man, you want me to do YouTube videos? Like some days there's like 10 in there, at least 10, right? Do you know what first thing I do when I've got an overflowing inbox? I select all of those and I just delete them. I don't even open them. Well, like if I wanted those things done, I know where to find people, right? Or I'm going to go out and find them myself. I just delete them. I'm going to answer our students. I'm going to answer my customers.
Not when you fucking select all. What the fuck?
No. I select all the ones because you can always see.
You said select all. No, like, I don't mean everything in your inbox, man.
Well, that's a productivity hack for you. Just delete all your emails. Well,
I know some people that do it. That's crazy.
You can always tell cold outreach from like the subject line. Because it'll be a stupid subject line that is clearly not a customer. It's meant to hook you in or something. You know.
I love your podcast, especially that one about the thing you teach. Yeah. That was my favorite.
I delete all of those straight up. And so your supplier, often when they get in the morning, they might not be in a good mood. They might have had a rough night with their kids. You know, they might be arguing with their partner. They might be feeling sick. Sales might not be going well. They're just not in the frame for it right then and there. And they can just delete your email. Like they can just delete it without even looking at it. So open rates on email are generally between 30 and 40%. So largely, if you send 10 emails, probably five of them at least at best are not going to get looked at. Right? So I don't think that's a very sound strategy for building a business around. Like if you're saying I'm serious about building a business, it has to work for me. And then you're going and taking a route that's not even going to get you off on the right foot. It's lazy.
it's easy. It's the easy button, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to give you the best results. I get it. Oftentimes, you'll see only a contact page. You won't find a number, so you'll convince yourself, I'll just fill this out. It'll be fine. Maybe you should fill it out, but you should also hunt that down. So you can find email addresses with hunter.io. You can find phone numbers simply by just being a little bit of a sleuth on Google. Call every single time. And every single time.
Some people are going to say, oh, but on the website, it says fill in this online application form. If the website says that's how they prefer to get that, then yeah, do that. And then call them.
Yep.
And say, hey, man, I just put in an application for you to be a dealer. I'm really excited. I love your products. I just wanted to make sure that you've got that. Can you see that response? Like, follow it up. Like, not like 10 days later. Like, follow it up almost straight away. Still make the call. Do both. If you've been getting tons of value from the podcast and you want to learn more about high-ticket dropshipping and interact with a fantastic community of high-ticket dropshippers, we've got a free Facebook group that you can join right now today. So if you head over to Facebook and search for Dropship Breakthrough, you'll see a Facebook come up that has on the end of it, High Ticket Dropshipping Mastery for New Entrepreneurs. Hit the join button, you'll get into the group. We do group only trainings in there, and there's thousands of other people who are going through the high ticket dropshipping journey that you can look for support from, ask questions, and find out if high ticket dropshipping is for you.
I think follow-up could have been a thing on this list too, right? I have a spreadsheet, and then I put out like six columns. First contact, second, third, fourth, fifth, because you're likely not going to hear back on the first one. You might. Maybe you'll get the right person at the right time. Everything will go smooth. But really, you probably need to fill out the contact form and give them a call and call them back on Tuesday, call them back on Thursday, send an email on Friday, reach back out on Monday, and then maybe you'll get a hold of somebody on Wednesday of the next week. And maybe, just maybe, they'll send you stuff the following week to actually upload stuff. It's a process. And it's a real test of how bad do you want this. And it's one of many tests you'll go through as a business owner. So how bad do you want this? Call every single one.
Yeah. Second on the list. And this is kind of how I learned how to do it.
I think it's how we were taught.
Yeah. Is to only contact suppliers that you can see on other drop shipping websites. So the logic behind that being, if they drop ship for someone else, then they're definitely going to drop ship for you. And it'll be an easy yes. Right. And that's not untrue. Right. In a lot of cases, it is true. I'd probably say that some of those suppliers are going to be really competitive and maybe they're not the best suppliers as well. But once again, there's going to be, like, if you take that approach, you're kind of setting up your business based on the way that somebody else who you don't even know, you don't even know if they've done a good job, like the other dropshipping site you looked at, like that might be a shit business. Why would you want to replicate that? Basically, you know nothing about it. Not to mention, there's just probably going to be plenty of suppliers in that niche who aren't on that site. And that might be because the person who started that business is really terrible at what they do, right? And so once again, it's a really bad measuring stick for you if you want to build a really good business. And there's, like, I can't count the number of times here in Australia where I called suppliers and their response was, oh yeah, we've never done that before, but it sounds interesting. Can you tell me some more about how that works? And I did. And they were like, oh, yeah, okay, I can see that. Let's give it a go. Or ones that weren't on other dropshipping websites, and I called them up and they were like, well, you know, we're just changing our company policy. We haven't done dropshipping before, like proactively haven't done it, but we realize now that we need to be more online. You can be our first one, right? Or we'll trial it with you. Like, that happens. And so if you take the approach of just doing, once again, what looks easy because you see other people doing it, you're going to miss opportunities. And they could be your best suppliers. They could be the least competitive suppliers, the best margin suppliers, right? And so, yeah.
I'll be a contrarian here just for 1 second. Start there. Make your list. Like, here's the 10 competitors I see. Here's the brands they have. And I want you to pick the one that everyone has. And I want that to be your first call so that you get a yes for your first fucking call. And you go, I did it. Because everything else is going to suck from there. And by suck, I mean you're going to have to show them that you want to build a business. You're going to have to work hard, get all of those, and then do, like John said, there's a lot of brands out there that aren't even online perhaps, haven't even started advertising online. They're only a brick and mortar thing, and they'd love an opportunity. Or if you're in a country like Australia, there's just no one there yet. So how would you discover them if you only went to other sites that look similar to what you think your site should look like? You have to go out and, like,
call everyone. I get very excited about calling the ones that I don't see everywhere, because those are the ones with the real opportunity. And then don't fall into the trap that it's like only the big brands too, I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And right on schedule, I just got an email from somebody.
Asking this question?
No. Asking to help me grow my business.
Oh, nice.
Guess what I'm doing right now?
Delete.
I archive just in case I want to go back to it.
Never.
Look, next on the list is something I think is the next step in your journey, right? So you clear this hurdle of calling the suppliers and calling the ones that are uncommon, and you got them, and they send you all of their stuff over, and you simply copy and paste it onto your website. I think it's too common. I think a lot of people are doing this because, again, it's easy. It's easier to just copy it, run ads, and hope you make a sale. But the reality is, as John would tell you, Google Shopping, where we start, is a comparison shopping engine. So they're comparing you against other people. And if your site looks exactly the same as other people, the odds of you getting the sale aren't very good. You need to speak to your customer. And so we talk a lot about this at our live events. We talk a lot about this on the podcast. Speak to the person behind the screen. If you don't know who that is, really sit and think, who's buying these products? What problem are they trying to solve? And there might be a few different avatars. You might have heard our episode recently where I kind of went into that for one of the businesses I was part of. You have to know who you're talking to and then talk directly to them. Even at our live events, when we were pulling up websites of people who've been around a while, their description was the product name blank. The product does this. The product specs are that. And you can do a whole lot better. You can talk directly to the customer and ask them questions. Is this the problem you're trying to solve? Do you have this problem? I like to think through a matrix that George Bryan taught me, which is like before state, what's their objection, and what's their after state? And really talk to that before state. Are you having all of these problems? Are you feeling this way? Here's where this product can help you out and take you to this after state. Do you wish you were in this after state? And then bust the objections they have along the way. But it takes work. It takes work, especially when you're just starting and you're uploading hundreds of products, right? This takes effort to not just copy and paste. And I'll say this from an SEO front. If you can just get your headlines to be unique and get your image file names and everything else that's in the checklist in our course, you can win early on. Just by getting a little bit different, not a lot of bit different, a little bit different. Get your headlines, maybe your first paragraph, something different than what they're used to seeing online. Google's robot will like you too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'd play devil's advocate a tiny bit and say, like, I don't mind the cut and paste to get it into your Shopify account. But yeah, you 100% have to be changing things, like, pretty much. As soon as it's there, do you know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't be like putting it up there and leaving it like 3 months before you go back and touch any of those products. That's, you know,
if you want to run ads, I think find out where your traffic goes,
probably is less important, but it's got to be real early that you're going through those products and, you know, making those. I certainly agree. Even if it's just like, yeah, the headline, the first paragraph, once again, you're going to have suppliers who don't have descriptions sometimes as well, or it's like next to nothing. So you're going to have to do something. And you absolutely would, because you're not going to sell many products that have like specifications and nothing else.
Mm.
And that can, the downside of that is if you start running ads on those products, you can give yourself a false negative, right? You might say, well, I ran traffic to that product and it didn't sell. When the reality is you just weren't giving the customers what they needed to actually make the sale. And somebody else probably was somewhere else in your market. So, yeah, it's time consuming. Once again, it is challenging. It's another one of those challenging things that you've got to push through as a e-commerce business owner. But
I agree with you. Don't wait, though. Like, launch your ads. You'll quickly find out 20% of your products get the traffic.
Yeah.
Fix those first.
Yeah,
totally. Like, start there.
Yeah,
prioritize. You don't have to go do all of them. And hopefully you don't have this next problem, which is 10,000 plus products. I can't believe there's people out there teaching this. That you should have 10,000 products on your business. I think we have someone in our course that has something similar to this. And you said you met with him recently and he was doing good. So I'm not going to say it's not possible. In fact, I think you will make sales. But I don't think you'll scale a business that way. If you sell a pellet grill next to a red light machine, next to an Adirondack chair, like, there's no congruity there. There's not one person you're serving behind the screen. And I think when you can focus on one person, you're probably going to have a lot less than 10,000 products, and you're going to be able to speak directly to this person. You're going to be able to build a community of those people to which you can sell the other products they care about. I don't see the methodology. Like, what is someone thinking when they're like, I should put 10,000 plus products on my store?
I don't know what they're thinking, but I'll tell you what. The people out there who recommend you do this, like go and get these distributors and they have, you get access to all these products, tons of products across all sorts of different categories. Almost invariably, that is an immediate signal that they don't actually have much experience. Mm. They've probably done it once themselves. And yeah, they made some sales. Maybe they even made decent sales. But you're absolutely right. They're, in the beginning, that may work, but you run into a range of problems. It's one, anyone can do that. And if you're there teaching a whole bunch of other people to do that, how are any of them going to win? They're all basically creating the same site with the same fucking supplier directories and the same distributors. So they've all got access to the same brand, selling it, building an everything site. Mm. By definition, if you told 500 people to do that, maybe 10 would make any real money. So it's completely disingenuous. And like, you know, to go out and say, everybody should do this, because automatically not many people can win. Like, it's just defined by the market. There's only X number of all of those products that are going to be sold. And the notion that, oh, well, somebody will sell this one and somebody else, that's wrong. That's not how that works either. For those sites, I would be surprised if anybody with 10,000 products was regularly selling more than 100 of those products, like regularly. Do you know what I mean? Mostly they're just creating a website that's full of trash, which leads into the next problem, SEO that.
Yeah. I don't understand how you could possibly win an SEO with 10,000 products, let alone who are you talking to?
And this, but this brings back to the inexperience bit. People who recommend that, they've never done SEO. Mm. They don't even know what that is. They run ads to some of those products and they sell some of them, sure. 10,000 products, Google Shopping is not giving you an even number of impressions across 10,000 products either, right? So you're not even really advertising all of them, even if they're in your ads. Do you know what I mean? So like I say, you can't SEO it. Therefore, as far as high-ticket dropshipping is concerned, you can't scale it because you're not growing a high-ticket dropshipping business in the long term to high numbers just off ads. Like, no one's done that, like, not in today's day and age. Maybe way back at the start of e-commerce and dropshipping, people were doing that for sure. But that's not the case anymore. And part of the reason is... You're not building a sellable asset.
Who's buying that?
You build a multiple seven-figure e-commerce business and a website investor comes and looks at it and all you can do is run ads and you've got a massive back-end mess. They're going to go, oh, I'll cut your valuation in half maybe. Or they're just going to go, that's an unsecure business because you got one traffic source. I'm not investing in that. And I can't see that. I don't even want to deal with the mess of doing the SEO for that, right? I could see it working in the short term, but there are just so many problems with it. Like, you just can't build a business on that. Not to mention like the wasted effort, like uploading all of those products when you're not even going to sell 9,000 of them ever. What's the point of that? Like, it's not necessary. And yeah, who are you talking to? Who's your ideal customer? Like, the notion you're going to be the next Amazon, there's not going to be another Amazon, right? It's a huge fallacy.
I don't get it. I also don't get the next one. I mean, I get it from a sense of easy, but the last one we have is copy and pasting from AI. AI didn't exist when we started. And not in the form it exists today. There was different forms of it, but to have a ChatGPT that you can literally say, I sell this product, write me a product description, didn't exist. And so I get the temptation to just grab it from there and put it on your product page. I can't discourage you enough from doing that. Like, don't do it. Google clear, like, anything that you had ChatGPT write, you can put back into ChatGPT and say, did you write this? And it'll tell you yes or no. So if you're not editing it at all, number one, you know it's AI. Google knows it's AI. And their recent updates, which they've done quite a few at the end of the 2023 year, was all around helpful content. And could AI be helpful? Sure. Is it accurate all the time? Hell no. Is it a word guessing machine? Yes. And so, like, please don't copy and paste. I like to use it for ideas. I like to use it to generate the way I'm going to talk to that person, where I can put in prompt after prompt after prompt explaining, hey, this is what my person's problem is. This is the emotions they're working through. this is how I like to have empathy. This is how our values shine through in our product descriptions. And it can give you some ideas on hooks and different ways to speak to your customer. But if you're just taking that simply right out of ChatGPT or right out of Bard or right out of Grok or any of the others and putting it on your product page, I think you're just setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, absolutely. There is no evidence at this point that that is a good strategy. Undoubtedly, AI is a massive productivity tool to assist you improve your productivity. But it can't do it all yet. Will that change in the future? Well, who knows? Who knows where it's all going, right? At this point in time, I don't know. Nobody knows exactly. But yeah, right now, like it just doesn't even write the best quality stuff, right? So if you're just copy and pasting AI produced copywriting or content, there's likely somebody out there who's combining an AI with a human who's doing a better job of it than you. Like the best copywriters are still better than AI. The best content writers are still writing better content than AI. In 2023, and probably still be the case in 2024. And so I think, yeah, it's not there yet. Regardless of Google algorithms and that sort of thing, like it just doesn't sell stuff that well.
Yeah, I like to keep it off my front end. No product descriptions, no collection descriptions, no homepage unless I'm doing a hook for the banner image or something like that. On the back end, though, I like it. But again, it's not perfect. You have to edit this stuff. So if you want to write emails with it, great. If you want to write hooks for your Facebook ads or your text ads, great. But I'm not messing around on the SEO front. I've seen a few cases where this works. There are a few cases on Twitter currently going around right now where there's a big snafu around. The Thread Boys put out like, I created this website and stole this traffic. And then the website owner who they stole it from is like complaining and half the internet's fighting with it. They stole it. That's not fair. And the other side is like, hell yeah, that's not stealing. That's the marketplace being the marketplace. The market being the market, as Gary likes to say. But I don't think it lasts long. And people are already getting hit with this, right? The helpful content updates are scary. To me, I've seen people get hit with this, whereas the site, again, my pet site, where we use a veterinarian, where we use real people and credit those people speaking, we saw a big boost. We saw a very big boost during those updates. And I think a lot of people who are copy and pasting have seen different. And if they haven't yet, you got to believe it's coming, right? This is just another way SEOs are SEOing that got slapped, right? If you go back and look at Panda Penguin, all of those updates, they all slapped something. This just feels like it's next. So I just don't like to mess around with it. Although for ideas, unbelievable. Like I think I mentioned this at a live event. I sat on a plane for 3.5 hours from Las Vegas back to Minneapolis and just spoke back and forth, not really getting too much out of it, but informing who our customer was, what their pain points were, making sure that ChatGPT understood my problem and then asked it for a little bit of help. And it helped write some good hooks or some ad ideas for us. And hopefully you've been seeing around the internet. But it still wasn't quite there yet either. It just didn't quite get it. And I do think it's inevitable that we get there. Mm. I'm just scared to use it on the front end right now.
Yeah. And I hear people say, oh, I read all these blog posts and just cut and paste them. I mean, I get it. Once again, you want to go faster and all of that sort of thing. But once again, it's just an easy button at this point. And there's a reason sometimes that, you know, some things take a bit longer, and that's because they need to be quality. They need to be good. They need to be the best sometimes. And so, you know, shortcutting that stuff at this point in time is, you know, it's going to slow you down more than speed you up. So yeah, definitely avoid that.
Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business. John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business. Not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about
all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business. We're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for the Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out the Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.